This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
As fighting continues in Ukraine, global shipping companies halt shipments into and out of Russia. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Officials in Ukraine's second city, Kharkiv, say the Russian military has attacked the city center with rockets and cruise missiles. That's as forces move closer to the capital, Kyiv. Our BBC correspondents on the ground say overnight they heard loud explosions closer than they have been. As Russia's invasion continues this morning, Copenhagen-based shipping giant Maersk said it's temporarily stopping all container shipping into and out of Russia. The company declined an interview but said in a statement due to its 31% ownership stake in Russian port operator Global Ports, it's looking at how best to comply with ever-evolving international sanctions and restrictions. Richard Mead, editor of shipping journal Lloyd's List, explains the growing risk to shipping companies in doing business with Russia.
What you've seen over the last few days is people looking at the official sanctions in place, but you've seen a load of crisis meetings across boardrooms in the shipping industry because there's a self-imposed series of sanctions effectively. No shipping company really wants to be associated with Russia right now because they're having trouble getting credit from the banks because the banks aren't willing to process any financial transactions. And that's having a knock-on effect in terms of the ability to provide credit, and shipping is largely performed on the basis of credit, which is usually done in US dollars. So there is a real fear that shipping companies engaging in transactions that are ultimately linked to Russian entities could have sanctions imposed on them.
The question many people might be wondering is if companies are taking these decisions on their own, in other words, not waiting for sanctions to come into place from governments, why has it taken so long for the companies to make this call?
International shipping is, by its very nature, globally interconnected, and I think unraveling the Russian beneficially owned links within shipping is going to take some time. I think they are very much taking a wait-and-see policy within shipping right now. I've been speaking to people in board level across the industry over the last few days, and all of them have effectively put this on ice, but they are watching very carefully as to when they are going to be able to get back into business with Russia. This is not a long-term issue as far as they're concerned. It's a question of how they can get away with doing business with Russia in the long term. But in the immediate aftermath of the invasion, they cannot risk the business at the moment.
And I guess finally, for the last several days, we've been talking about Russia's ability to sort of work around the sanctions when it comes to SWIFT and the international payment system. Is there a workaround for Russia to get by some of these sanctions and company-level decisions on shipping?
It very much depends how this pans out. We've seen sanctions been worked around in many other examples, from Iran to Venezuela. And the general rule is that initially sanctions are very effective, but long-term workarounds are always found. And in the case of Iran, you've seen the emergence of a subterfuge fleet of vessels that are effectively off the grid, but are carrying sanctioned Iranian and Venezuelan crude around the world into customers like China, where they're not particularly concerned about the sanctioned nature of the product. If Russia is locked out on a full-term basis, it's very likely that you will see those types of workarounds come through the system. What we're going to see really is everybody watching very carefully over the developments over the next few days to see how forcefully the sanctions are imposed and what happens next.
Richard Mead, thanks so much for breaking this down for us.
No worries.
Checking the numbers now, Russian stock markets are closed for a second day as fighting in Ukraine continues. Elsewhere, European stock markets are solidly lower. Benchmarks here in London and in Paris, Frankfurt, and Madrid are down in the 0.9 to 2.6% range. Global oil prices, meanwhile, are up more than 3%. Brent crude is trading at $101 a barrel, while West Texas Intermediate is just above $98 a barrel. While stock markets around the world have suffered sharp declines as a result of Russia's Ukraine invasion, cryptocurrency currencies have surged. Bitcoin rose on Monday after the West imposed tougher sanctions on Russia and its central bank. The BBC's Michelle Fleury explains why it's so significant.
Bitcoin, the world's largest cryptocurrency, rose 10% to over $41,000 at one stage, and Ethereum jumped nearly 8%. It comes amid reports that Binance, the biggest crypto exchange, will not be blocking the accounts of Russian users despite calls to do so. Ukrainian Vice Prime Minister tweeting on Sunday, "I'm asking all major crypto exchanges to block addresses of Russian users. The worry is that without access to the global financial system, Russia will try to use cryptocurrency to get around Western sanctions." Meanwhile, in Ukraine, millions of bitcoins have poured in from donors to try to help. With cryptocurrencies, there is now a tool that makes it easy to move vast sums of money across borders to the benefit of both sides.
That's the BBC's Michelle Fleury reporting there. To Japan now, where a cyber attack at Toyota has caused a halt in production. The carmaker said operations should be back to normal by tomorrow, but the government is looking into the origins of the hack and whether it could be linked to Japan's support for Ukraine. The Prime Minister, Fumio Kishida, has joined Western sanctions against Moscow and announced $100 million in aid for Kyiv. So how likely is it that this is a response to Japan's involvement in sanctions against Russia? The BBC's Joe Tidy explains.
I think that it would probably be unlikely that this is a response to what's happening in Ukraine by the Russians against the Japanese. The reason for that is because these kind of large-scale attacks happening on really big companies, really important companies around the world, have been happening now for about a year and a half, 2 years. And they happen so often that I can't keep up and I can't report all of them. Obviously, that's not to take anything away from the severity of this situation. Toyota is the biggest car maker in the world. But the thing to bear in mind is that not only have these things been happening way long before the Ukraine crisis, but also it takes hackers sometimes weeks, sometimes months to gain entry into a computer system, because everything points to, at this stage, this being effectively a ransomware criminal for-profit attack.
I guess the question that many might have is, how do you determine who's conducting an attack like this on a scale like this?
It's really, really difficult. And attribution in cyber is nearly impossible because, of course, they can be using bits of software that disguise where they're launching their attack from. But there is a mountain of evidence that suggests that a lot of the ransomware gangs are headquartered in Russia. We know this because a lot of the attacks take place during Moscow trading hours. And there's only quiet times in ransomware attacks during Russian public holidays. Some of the discussions that have been infiltrated take place in Russian on these forums to plan their attacks. But that's, again, not to say that these attackers who attack Toyota or any other company are definitely in Russia.
The BBC's Joe Tidy. Thanks for breaking this down.
Thank you.
Well, as always, you can stay up to date on the very latest news at marketplace.org and bbc.com/news. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.